a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 211. Okay, a little housekeeping. Evidently, we got a couple of iTunes mislabeled on the last couple that went over to the iTunes account. Sorry about that. And what made it worse and made it hard was evidently on episode 208, by all accounts, I said episode 128. I have no idea what I was thinking. I was probably just tired, distracted, and who knows why. I don't know why in the world I said 128. I would claim dyslexia, but it wasn't, you know, there's no one in there. So if you fell prey to the weirdness of the iTunes recently, mea culpa. I haven't even listened to it. I personally, between you and I don't believe. I heard just some random Disney princess came into my shop and said this and then texted me. But then my producer agreed that I did in fact say 128. So Ethan is a professional, and so I publicly apologize for making Ethan sort that out. Even though, well, I'm not the person who does the iTunes though, so I said 128 that made it hard probably though. So I apologize for that. If anyone was confused by the iTunes snafu, I didn't mean to do that. So, man, busy day. Just a good day though. I had to do an interview today, and I mean literally like a job interview, not for me. I had to interview someone to possibly hire them. I love having conversations with people. That is a form of conversation that I don't know how to do that. You know, I just, you know, I don't know. I always assume that anyone that I'm interviewing is going, God, this is the weirdest, least professional interview that I have ever had. But it was interesting. It brought a super interesting person. And I had a couple of insights that that why I like certain people and why I think certain people are good at what I do in this world, that may come up later on. So what's going on, tonight, the lovely and talented Chris Stefanik bailed on me last week as I called him out on the show for doing, but, the good news is that we rescheduled. So tonight we are going to have a bottle of wine / Calyx meeting and talk about launching this here thing that we like to call Calyx into a full-blown nonprofit and apostolate. So it's happening, folks. We're pulling the trigger. While you're listening to this tonight live on the stream, I will be sitting and drinking wine and plotting to take over the world with Chris Stefanik. This weekend, Ken Kramer coming back to town. Maybe might get an interview with Ken tomorrow for a show. I'm hanging out with him in the morning. I'm going to try to set the mics up and do an interview with him if I can. Going on retreat this weekend. Ken was running a retreat and he invited me to go. So some donor paid for people who wanted to go on this one retreat, and they didn't have, so it's right down here in beautiful Sedalia, Colorado. And so I'm going on a retreat tomorrow, and I'm going to be there all weekend, just, you know, like a little 2-3 day retreat. And I really need it. Just some nice, it's really beautiful out there. A couple years ago, I went on the same retreat. I woke up one morning, just couldn't go back to sleep. So I got coffee and went for a hike and got way out into the foothills, and up on this big hill, there's a little kind of a gazebo with a picnic table in it, and just sat there and drank coffee and watched the sun come up. So I think I might plan on doing that again over the weekend. It'd be nice to sleep though. So, pray for me if you hear this, over the weekend, I'm going to be trying to take some time and kind of reflect. Maybe I'll come up with something interesting to talk about. So in the Pokemon report, which I haven't done in a while, as best I know, Jennifer Longworth is still absolutely, completely, totally, inappropriately obsessed with Pokemon Go. That is the Pokemon report for the day. Speaking of online shenanigans, I don't know what got into me yesterday. I just kind of had, I was in my let's cause some trouble online mode. So I had posted an Eye of the Tiber article making fun of the whole National Catholic Register firing Mark Shea and Simca Fisher, which has really divided the Catholic internet. It's amazing. I may talk about that here in a little bit. I don't know. I guess I was just in a playful mood. So I have created something that may go viral, and I just want to claim it publicly online right now in case it goes viral, so we can go back to saying this is when it happened. So I came up with a new thing, and it's like trolling, where it's in all caps. It's got lots of punctuation marks, usually exclamation points, run-on sentences, kind of slightly suspect grammar, and a really, really aggressive sentence structure and aggressive kind of syntax, except it's extremely, extremely positive and extremely authentic. It's anti-trolling, and I've decided to call it gnoming. Because who doesn't like gnomes? Trolls are scary. They live under bridges. Gnomes have pointy hats, and they give you tips on travel, right? On camera. It's like, everyone likes gnomes. Trolls are scary. Gnomes are fun. So we decided that we're doing the opposite of trolling is called gnoming. So if you follow me on Facebook, you can probably see some examples of gnoming going on. And it has spawned the some of the most beautiful, delicious puns that I have seen in a while, like go hard or go gnome, or gnome man is an island. Now you gnome, you know, there's no place like gnome. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot you can do with it. Yeah. So, so that's been fun. People have started like gnoming each other on my site. Basically, you just write like we would if you're a troll. Except instead of being really mean and telling them to do horrible stuff, you tell people that they're beautiful and amazing and they should go buy themselves a new dress or a good cup of coffee because they deserve it. It's just anti-trolling. We're calling it gnoming. And it's already kind of getting a little viral. It's kind of becoming a thing. I'm happy about that. the other online shenanigans I'm up to. Oh, so, okay. I know that a lot of people have probably seen this like 7-day spouse challenge thing where for 7 days you put a picture up and you kind of tell the story behind that picture and a little something about your relationship or whatever. And so people are doing this, like, you know, and okay, for the record, the best kind of like satire on this that I've seen so far was my friend, former employee, mother of the baby Maria that loves me deeply and loves me more than Sarah Stacy, Sophia Bunderson. It's Sophia did the 7-day challenge, but it was like she did things that rhymed with spouse, like mouse and house and souse and all this stuff. It was amazing. So what I did was I put up, you know, 7-day spouse challenge, day one, and it was just a picture of a coffee house table with a journal and a cup of coffee. I'm like, here's me having a cup of coffee by myself, completely alone, because I'm alone, because my spouse doesn't exist, or I don't know who she Something along those lines. So I wasn't really planning on doing all 7 days, but now people are all like, what are you going to do next? So maybe I should copy those over to the counter position Facebook page. So, yeah, so I'm putting, I'm speaking up for all of us lonely ass single people that are watching all these people do this 7 day challenge where they're like for 7 days in a row, hey, I found love and you didn't. And we're really, really happy. We're so giddy and happy and we love each other so much. And it's been hard, but it's so meaningful and we're really happy. But you wouldn't know because you're single and you're alone. So I just decided to give voice to the great lonely single masses and just kind of mock the 7 day spouse challenge a little bit while, yeah. So, and then my friend John accused me of doing it to like fish for compliments or something. I wasn't really, I did have there was a couple of people that said that I was a catch or that I should have a spouse or something. I appreciate that. I'm glad there are people in this world that think that, I'm not worthy of just being alone for the rest of my life. I appreciate that. But I honestly wasn't doing it just trying to get compliments or whatever. I was just trying to just kind of comically, as you may have figured out, I have kind of a dark sense of humor. And so I just thought I would just kind of comically mock the whole, way that single people feel when everyone else is going on and on about how much love they have for their life. It's like, it's not that we don't like you. It's not that we're not happy for you. We're very happy for you. I'm glad you found someone. Love is like gum in class in elementary school. If you don't have enough for everyone, you can't bring it out. All right, let's go to the break. Listen into the counter position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so what do I do when I'm not playing the internet prankster with dark comedy about being alone? I read things, and I make coffee, and I have conversations. And I do this little thing called The Counter Position. And I do other things, too. But one thing I do is I read things. And one of the things I read was on Traces. You can go to tracesonline.org, which is the magazine of communion and liberation. The movement that I hang around with people who are in. I wouldn't say I'm even in the movement. I almost went to school community last night. I even had Ducky, shout out to Ducky Laurent, buy me a copy of the spiritual exercises that they're working on right now. And I worked 12 hours yesterday and I left with the intention of going to small group, and 20 minutes of traffic later, I was just like, I am ready to snap and I don't want to be around anyone. I just want to go be alone. I'm just like, traffic destroys me. I'm telling you, I am so over traffic. I'm about to go Luddite and just move into a cabin. You 6 months from now, you're going to be listening to this show going, so today there was a bear outside the cabin. I mean, you know, here's a picture of the bear. I'm just hanging out here by myself in my cabin with my sharp number two pencil. You know, the only piece of equipment I have is what I record this show on. That's going to be my life in 6 months. I'm about to just go straight up Unabomber on this thing. I'm just going to get a shack out in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, so on Traces Online, which is a really great thing to read, by the way. There's an interview with Father Julian Caron, the international head, the leader, the maestro, if you will, of Communion Liberation. And they published this interview that this Italian paper, I believe, did. and it's really spectacular. And there was a concept in here that I just kind of want to talk about a little bit. So, because CL had gotten very kind of like involved with the political culture in Italy and all this stuff, and it's a very different thing in Italy. And he's talking about asking him about Europe and about Islam, and about, you know, and he says, he asked Father Caroni, he says, in the meantime, however, history has not held still, rather the opposite, and a paradox has emerged. You were very active against secularization and the protests of 1968, and yet today, in front of the threat of radical Islam, you profess that you are unarmed. And there was something in his response to how their response to Islam is differing from how they responded to kind of the protests of 68. And he says, I'll respond first of all to the question of the 1970s. He says, Father Giuzzani explained ex post that our activism was motivated by an existential insecurity, and said that we had accepted the same playing field as those we criticized. In the end, we were a reactive presence when we should have been an original presence. To live, CL did not and does not need an enemy. This holds for Islam too. This concept of a reactive presence versus an original presence is something I want to talk about. What is a reactive presence? What does it mean to react? It means that your actions are tied to and are sculpted by some other actions. You are acting in response to. Your reaction is something that you probably would not have done. You would not have held this event. You would not have written this thing. You would not have lived in this way had it not been for this. Now, we are called to live in the time we're in. We are called to be a voice of the church, and a voice for God, a voice for reason, a voice for reality in the moment that we are placed. But here's the thing. If we choose what we say, what we create, what we make, how we say it, how we create it, how we make it, if we choose all of that we let that be dictated by what's happening around us, then we are in some way, we are letting this dictate kind of like what happens. If we do that, the thing that is happening that we're reacting to is in a way, the source of our living and a source of our creation, a source of our making. Its fingerprints are all over it, you know. And what he said, he was saying that after the fact, Giuzzani had looked at how they reacted to 1968. And he said that we chose to basically play by the same rules on the same field, to play the same game as the people we were reacting to. You know, Nietzsche, I think, famously said, be careful when you fight the enemy that you don't become the enemy. And that's an interesting thing. You know, if you start letting your enemy, so to speak, or your interlocutor, the person that you're trying to refute, or the person whose effects in the world you're trying to counteract, dictate the rules of the game, you can see that happening. I mean, a good example would be, I remember during this last primary debate, primary season, Marco Rubio at one point, you know, Trump was getting all these numbers and all this press and all this stuff and taking all these hard shots at people. And at one point he kind of picked up the tone of Trump and he made a joke about his spray tan. And he started making kind of ad hominem insults at Trump to kind of look tough and to fight back, to show that he could fight back, right? And afterwards, he looked back on that and he openly admitted that he had regretted going there, that he regretted his kids seeing him accepting those rules and playing in that game. Even though he was fighting what he thought was a foe, which I consider to be a foe, and that foe did in fact end up hijacking and taking over the Republican nomination. And you know what I think about this ridiculous dumpster fire that is our political process right now. But he regretted playing the game in that way. And you see this all the time. You see the politics are a great example. If there's a war of sound bites in like hard, you know, how did we get Trump? I mean, if there's a war of sound bites, we taught everybody that that sound bites are how we think. Fox News, I blame you. You taught Hannity and O'Reilly and all these people. They've taught an ocean of people with conservative leaning that the way you engage reality, the way you dialogue, is you pick a bunch of bullet points and you shout about it and you shout about it and you shout about it and you just repeat these bullet points and you make these little quick little turns of phrase and you just point them out. And then that way, when someone came along who could make even more closed-minded, even more black and white, even more weird, even more nasty bullet points and shout them louder, oh, he must be the guy we need. Right? So that's one mode of it. That would be taking on kind of the methods of someone. Let's say that we were, let's say that we're Catholics and we wanted to start doing evangelization. Let's say that there was a neighborhood where all these Jehovah's Witnesses were going out and like knocking on the doors and handing out all this stuff. And they were just, you know, talking to all these people. So to combat that, we decided to start door knocking, right? We're going out and we're now playing their game. We're just having these quick, or even better, it'd be like, there's a fundamentalist preacher that stands on the corner shouting and yelling, right? I've actually encountered this. Right. Whenever I was younger, there's a guy just shouting and yelling on the corner, telling everybody they're going to hell or whatever. And so we set up a Catholic corner and we shout and yell the truth. The problem is that we've reacted to him and we've resorted to shouting and yelling and sound bites from a corner. Right. Now, I don't think that's what CL did in the 1970s. I'm just trying to I'm trying to find an example to talk about how reaction can dictate method and dictate our actions, and whether or not that's the way to do something, and whether or not there's a better way, whether or not there is a better way to be right, or a better way to proclaim the truth, or a better way to affect society other than reaction, right? Other than being, you know, if someone is coarse for the sake of the truth, for the sake of the falsity, should we just be, you know, I remember this guy that was like this really weird preacher that would just shout and yell and do all kinds of crazy stuff and was really divisive. And he said, when I was a sinner and I was out in the bars, I was crazy for the devil. And now I'm saved and I'm crazy for Jesus. And I was like, wouldn't it be better to say now you're saved and you're sane for Jesus? It's like, you were crazy for the devil. Maybe you should be sane for Jesus. That's like saying I used to rob banks for the devil. Now I rob banks for Jesus. You don't want to do that. All right. So I just ran this into the ground. So now when I get back from the break, I want to talk about what would this look like if we lived authentically, if we, what would an original presence look like different than a reactive presence? You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew.
Lit high, we crave a hanging, and it's dark.
Breadbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Breadbox Media.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we were talking about an interview with Father Julian Caron that is on tracesonline.org. It was from an Italian newspaper, I believe. And he was asked about why their attitude had changed towards Islam, the apostolate, the movement, Communion and Liberation, and why he was proposing kind of a different stance before the onslaught of Islam as the one that they kind of took in public society regarding the great upheavals that happened in Europe and America in 1968. And Father Caron says that their activism was motivated, he said that Father Giuzzani explained after the fact that their activism was motivated by an existential insecurity, and said that they had accepted the same playing field of those we criticized. In the end, we were a reactive presence when we should have been an original presence. Now, that's what I'm talking about, is the difference between a reactive presence and an original presence. Now, I don't know how this applies to CL. I don't know how it applies to the particulars of what was going on in 1968 in Italy and how CL responded, because I don't know much about it. And I don't know how CL on the ground in Italy is responding to Islam. So I can't speak of that. I'm just merely pulling from this and making my own and ruminating on it myself based on what we're trying to do, what we're trying to live in America and talk to people that are anti-religious or anti-Catholic or, you know, in a place where, you know, gender has gone off the rails and people think that you can pick your own gender and all the stuff that's going on and how hatred is being redefined and all that. That's the world I live in. So Islam is definitely radical jihadist Islam is a problem. But we are starting to have terror attacks here in America, and it may become a more daily kind of like a, God, for a while there, it just seemed like this one terror attack after another somewhere in Europe or here. Hey, you know what? Sidebar, completely just, talking about Italy and, sidebar is there was, I want to, before we go to this talking about an original presence, there was a 6.2 earthquake and it was, centered just about in Norcia. And I had just met, two of the Benedictine monks that work with the brewery there that make Birra Nursia that are there at the birthplace of St. Benedict and St. Scholastica in the middle of the town of Norcia. It's a little monastery that's on the birthplace of these two great saints, St. Benedict, the father of Western monasticism, the patron of Europe. And they had kind of revamped and kind of revitalized the small monastery on that site. And Norcia, the city of Norcia, the town of Norcia, was roughly the epicenter of the 6.2 earthquake. And so that whole order, monastery full of monks have had to head out and go to Rome, because their building isn't safe, and they've done some beautiful revitalization there that was just in shambles. And last I heard is well over 200 people are dead in that part of Italy. And so, before I go on, I just want to ask everyone to, pray for the Monastery di San Benedetto in Norcia, Italy, and about for the Benedictine monks that are displaced from that earthquake, for all of the people in that region of you know, Norcia and Perugia and all that area in Italy there, there's just hundreds of people dead from this earthquake. There's a lot of very old, beautiful buildings there that are probably not super earthquake resistant, and things just fell down on people, and they're still just like trying to find survivors in places. That's absolutely just crazy. And so, yeah. And then, so keep the, and if you, and the other thing you can do is, I'll try to find a link and put it in the show notes, to the website for the monastery of Saint Benedict there. If you want to give money to help them out, I think they're trying to help in the region themselves, but they also are incurring a lot of expense to try to repair that monastery and to take care of all their monks and get them resettled while they're working on that. So, if you're so inclined, you could throw a few bucks at those monks over in, Norcia, Italy, probably would help out. So there you go. I forgot all about that. I'm talking about Italy and it dawned on me, big earthquake in monks, people that I just met, two monks from Texas. They're mostly American monks that are in that monastery. Two Texan monks that are there that are helping brew the beer that they're selling to support their monastery. And they probably just got home and they're earthquaked right out of their monastery. So keep them in your prayers and maybe throw a few bucks at their monastery, try to help them to rebuild. There you go. Okay. Sidebar over. So we're talking about being in a reactive presence for an original presence. And I'm looking at this in the context of my life, in the context of what I do, in the context, which is to basically run a coffee house and talk to all kinds of people and help. And I'm launching this nonprofit, Calyx, to go and build coffee house bookstores in the middle of culture and to engage people. And so what to build, what to carry, how to set it up, how to decorate it, how to train people to talk about what they're going to talk about. And all this is very much on my mind. And it's something that I couldn't put my finger on, that I didn't really have I could say all day long, we're not just there to do a bunch of apologetics. We're not just there to, extend the Catholic bubble into the space. We're not just there to do this, but we're also not there just to be there for the sake of being there and hope something works out. And I was like, what are we there to be? It's religious, but it's not what people would maybe think of as religious. And how is it religious? If we do something religious, how would we do it? Right. And when I saw this dichotomy, this setup that Caron put out there of being reactive versus original, or a reactive presence versus an original presence, I was like, that's what we want to be. We want to be an original presence. What is the difference? Well, for one thing, reacting is going to make you do one of two things. And we saw Father Jose Medina, who's the American head of CL, and I've talked about this article a million times, right after the SCOTUS decision and the gay marriage decision, everybody was just trying to figure out how to get out of the culture or how to build a separate culture alongside this one and how to do that. And he was a first responder running to the flames. And he wrote this article in the Boston Pilot in the faith section, that I've linked 100 times. You can Google it and find it. It's Father Jose Medina. And he said that we have to go back to being like we were in the original church. We have to live in a unique and compelling way in the middle of society. And I think that's what Caron means by an original presence. We have to be a presence that is the result. And these buzzwords have come around a lot, but I'm not using these as buzzwords. It is the result of an encounter. We have had a raw encounter with reality. We have not numbed our longing for the infinite. we have not denied the fact that we are not merely animals and nature doesn't by itself suffice for us, that we can eat all we want, but there's a level of our being that is still hungry for something that isn't just food, that we can have all the pleasure we want. We can have all the meaning that we want that is just tied to the our physical nature and our merely animal nature. We can procreate and continue the species. We can get enough food. We can have enough pleasure, but that doesn't leave us satisfied. And we have not numbed, we have not denied, and we have not quelled or silenced that desire in our hearts. And we have went out and looked at a raw engagement of reality. We have given ourselves over to a vulnerable, passive engagement with the real in all of its aspects, including the divine. And we have let that affect us. We have had an encounter with reality and with the divine aspect of reality. And then we live in that encounter. That should be what we react to. We should react to an original presence is when we react to reality in our engagement with it, and not react to something going wrong or something going off the rails and create some program or, you know, choose some ideology to live through because it's the opposite ideology, the opposite program, or the opposite set of things from what's happening. You know, we can't just, I jokingly did this on the internet. I didn't even think about this. You can't just go out and be super, super positive, but still talk like a troll. That was a joke, right? You have to speak actually authentically, even in the way you speak, not just what you say, right? So I'm not sure what I'm trying to say with this. I'm gonna keep going at it when we get back and see if I can't come to something. We may not. That's the nature of the show. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. See you on the other side.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we're talking about the concepts of an original presence versus a reactive presence. And this is from a quote from Father Julian Caron, the international head of Communion and Liberation, in an article on Traces Online, tracesonline.org. And I'm just kind of ruminating on what it would mean to live an original presence and what would it mean to live a reactive presence. And we want to be original. We want to have an original presence and not a reactive presence. And I'm saying that to have an original presence is to be what you say it, how you live, what you create, what you make, being an outgrowth, an organic development of a deep encounter with reality, including the divine aspect of reality, that has resulted from you being unwilling to quell, silence, numb, or ignore your longing for the infinite, your longing for meaning beyond nature, beyond the animalistic, that you're not shutting off that part of you that is not fulfilled merely by nature. And that when we don't shut that off, when we refuse to live as mere animals, or to act as if we have no desires that are not fulfilled by matter and energy. And we live in that aching, longing state long enough, and we don't shield ourselves from reality. When we really open ourselves up to an engagement with the real, including the divine aspect of the real, then we will live in a different way. We will be a type of living. We will be a presence in the world that is, I was describing the other day, someone, what I want to do with these coffee houses that we're building as Calyx, these coffee houses and bookstores. And I said that I want it to be an oasis of intellectual, spiritual, artistic, even culinary wonder, personal wonder in a kind of a desert of the banal and a desert of the meaningless and the hopeless. Just right there in the middle of that desert, we want to be this little oasis of wonder. And a place where people are living in this way, and they're there all the time, right? And a friend of mine said, like a Pokestop, except for reality. Like a Pokestop or a Pokegym, except, look, there's reality, there's wonder and beauty here in this place, and you can find it online, then stop by and expect to encounter it. Yes, it's like a Pokestop for reality and for wonder. And I think that's what it would mean to be an original presence, is to be where you personally, in the way you live, the way you work, the way you talk, the way you cook, the way you eat, the way your family is, the way you set up your home, the way you carry yourself with your family, the way you worship, the way you pray, the way you write, the way you sing, the way you do all these things is a presence in the world that speaks of something that is beyond. That is, and that the answer to that longing that isn't answered by nature only, right? You eat in a way that shows you, you cook and eat in a way that shows that you appreciate and love beauty, and that you're mindful of what you put in you, and you know, of how that affects you. But you eat, you cook and eat in a way that points to this not being enough, so to speak. It's beauty and nourishment that points to something deeper and more beautiful and more nourishing that we crave, right? Just that way. And it sounds funny. I picked that example because it was kind of vague. But if you've ever been around people who buy real food and cook well and cook beautifully, it's like I'm going to see, I'm going to be in California. If anybody's listening, I'm flying in on the 1st. I fly out on the 6th, and we're going to try to do some kind of a meetup or something. There's going to be some interviews hopefully taking place now that I've got my gear down. And I'm going to hit a couple of those interviews that I tried to do the last time I was in town and couldn't get done because of tech issues. And I'll be in town from the Thursday before. I'm flying into LA and back out of LA on Tuesday. So I'm hoping to see a lot of you guys that are listeners and people, and I'm hoping to get some people on. Last time I was out, I really hoped to have some kind of a little live kind of like just record a bunch of people all at once at a little shindig or something. And it was just too hectic and we didn't get it done. So we're going to try to get some situation where I'm just going to kind of set up in the corner, and all these people you hear me talk about now and again, that the people that I love so deeply, the people that I care about, the people that I live, try to live in this way that I'm talking about with, you get to hear them a little bit. So anyway, drop me a line if you're in California, and maybe we can meet up for a coffee or something while I'm out there. At Counterposition on Twitter, thecounterposition@gmail.com. We're on Facebook as well. So the reason I thought of California is I'll go out there and I'll be staying with my friend Justin and Hope Schneer. Yes, I said Justin Schneer, so you have to drink. And I'll be cooking some food, and I'll be there chopping stuff or kind of like dry rubbing some meat or something. And inevitably, Justin will come through with a glass of wine in his hand, baby in the other arm or something, and go, "Dude, I just love watching you cook. It's just beautiful." And it's like, when I have friends that when you cook, when we just start chopping stuff up, and you're chopping and you're cooking and you're dry rubbing and you're taking a drink of wine, and you're talking, and you've bought things that are real, and you're taking the time to carefully put something together, and you're going to take a long time to cook something beautiful and then eat it well with people you love. I don't know how many times I have brought someone over to Hope and Justin's house or over to one of my friends' houses, and they've seen, we haven't even talked about religion. We've just cooked a meal, eaten a meal, sat around a fire playing with kids, and played some music, drank some decent wine, and they come away interested in Catholicism, interested in spirituality, interested in, and they've got questions. And it's like, why? It's because they've experienced people experiencing a presence. That's what it means to be an original experience, is to be a conduit of a presence that is beyond all this. God, the divine, the source of all this, the underlying reality, the logos, the second person of the Trinity incarnate in our Lord Jesus Christ is the underlying intelligibility of all of this, the order and the meaning, the laws of nature that make caramelization possible on onions, that meaning underneath it is in fact the nature of reality, which is that imprint of the meaningfulness, the logos of God. That's why things taste good. That's why things can be understood in a way that they can be combined and cooked. That's why something, truth, can be understood and be spoken of. That's why notes ring in a way that music can happen and beauty can come out, and that can wound your heart and make you feel something. And so that's how we live it. It might be a passion for working in justice and importing coffee in a certain way that honors the people that made it. It might be working in an after-school program and seeing some kid from the ghetto come in and make beauty and see himself differently in the process. It might be all kinds of things, but it's to live that way. Now, if you're reacting, you don't live in that way, and it doesn't have that beautiful sting to it. It doesn't, you can't, if you try to make something beautiful to just as a reaction to something ugly, it won't be the kind of beauty that wounds. It won't be the kind of beauty that speaks to something beyond itself. It won't be beautiful. It'll just be pretty. And we're not called, we don't talk about the true, the good, and the pretty, or the right, the moral, and the pretty. We talk about the true, the good, and the beautiful, right? That's what it is to have an original presence, is to be a conduit of reality by living in this constant, tapped-in moment to the source of everything, and letting it shape what you do and how you live, not a reaction. I don't know if that got anywhere. I liked it. Oh, the counter position. You crazy show, you. All right, let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode. See you on the other side.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.